a result of the outbreak, your city or entire region may be endangered by a lethal agent. If conditions at your location make this a possibility, you need to consider staying in place until the threat has subsided or blown over.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Viral Load Podcast. This is an epidemiology podcast. I'm Andy Pupa.
I'm Brett Bales.
And he is laughing at me. So this is the big one, Brett. Everyone's dying. Everything's going to go sideways. Yeah. The world is ending. And this is an update on COVID-19.
Yeah, the disease that just won't quit. and we did our first episode on this. Well, that was like a month ago at this point, something like that. It seems like a while ago, but yeah. we did our Wuhan coronavirus episode kind of at the beginning of all this fracas melee, and we're here today to kind of just do an update, talk about a little bit of the social reaction to the disease. Specifically, we're going to have our first interview segment with someone in the financial services industry and talk a little bit about sort of the kind of economic outcomes of all this, talk more about the kind of social aspect of misinformation and all that kind of stuff, and just kind of chat about sort of where we are with this, to use the P word, pandemic.
Yeah, this is the disease formerly known as Wuhan. Like, it's changed name since we started the podcast. It's pretty impressive. And it's, you even sent me another article where like it made it even more, confusing, because you were talking about how it came actually from the SARS-CoV-2 slash pandemic slash whatever. I couldn't even figure it out.
Yeah. So the COVID-19 is the name of the disease, and then the virus that causes the disease is the SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the seventh known virus, coronavirus, that can infect humans, but there are thought to be hundreds, if not more, coronaviruses circulating around in the animal kingdom, and this is the seventh that we know about that causes diseases in humans.
Awesome. That was super informative, and we all got it. So we've had a couple weeks off now, here and there. We had some computers that were on the fritz. We want to say thank you to a friend of the pod who helped us with some studio upgrades. We got some new MacBooks running here, not a plug, but simply the facts, and we got a new mic. We're doing well. So thank you guys for sticking around through some of the minor audio issues, and now we're going to be smooth sailing moving forward. So thanks a lot there, Mark.
Yeah, thanks, Mark, for the studio upgrades. So hopefully bigger and better things to come. Hopefully we're sounding nice and good and crispy in your ear balls, and we'll take it from there.
The ear balls, every time, ear balls, not, you know, tympanic membranes, not any part of the actual ear from a scientist, but the balls of the ear, the part that we all know extremely well, not even the lobes, the balls.
Yeah, I was actually out sick that day in grad school, and we covered the parts of the ear in my epidemiology training, so I'm sorry.
But, awesome. So where are we, Brett? Like, what's going on? Like, the world's going to end, you know, people are projecting that, you know, we all need to like go in underground bunkers and buy all the toilet paper. What's up? So, what's the real deal?
Yeah, the epidemiological update of COVID-19. Read this on CNN, and this is a good example of the kind of media hype reaction to this. They said globally, the coronavirus outbreak has passed the grim milestone of 100,000 cases globally. So they, you know, made sure to use the word grim as sort of their qualifier there, which again just, you know, feeds into this whole fear and hysteria thing. But regardless, we're at over 100,000 cases reported globally, and a big kind of thing to consider with that is when you're looking at the number of cases, the number of deaths, these are subject to a lot of like forms of bias and are not perfect. They're just our like best guesstimates. And a good way of thinking about this is like an iceberg. So what we're able to report, the cases and deaths we're able to count, are just what we can see. So like the tip of the iceberg. And then That does not include all of the cases that are either asymptomatic or where people just didn't get that sick and so were never counted as a case. So think of that as like kind of the denominator when we're doing the math of like case fatality rate, for example, when we're dividing the number of deaths divided by the number of people who got sick. That gives you an idea of like how deadly this disease is.
So by tip of the iceberg, are we talking about like we're all just going to crash into this iceberg and we're going to die and Kate Winslet is going to, you know, save herself and let Leo die? Like,
there was there was room on the on that piece of wood.
I'll never give it up.
And there's room for all of you in understanding this kind of discrepancy. So if you kind of take into account the fact that, you know, there's been, what, about 3,000 deaths, 3,800 deaths, according to the Johns Hopkins coronavirus database.
Okay.
And coming up to 110,000 cases. Based on kind of where you get your information, the mortality rate is around 2%. But if you take into account the fact that a lot of the cases have been underreported or not reported, because there's a good chunk of people who have probably been infected with coronavirus and just never knew it. And technically those are cases. So if you include those people in the calculation, you're probably looking at a case fatality rate that is closer to like 0.1 to 0.5%, which is more closely resembling seasonal flu, and not as much as the one of the last big coronavirus outbreaks was SARS. That has a case fatality rate of around 9%. So what that all means in kind of plain English is this is looking a lot less severe than other similar kind of zoonotic disease outbreaks and is behaving more and more like the seasonal flu.
Okay, but is there any truth to the fact that they're talking about that? Everybody I know keeps on talking about the fact that it's not any more deadly than the flu. However, it's moving faster through communities than the flu does. Is that, or is it pretty similar? Is there like any difference like that you could tell a discernible difference between the two, or is it pretty much the same?
Well, it's a little bit like apples and oranges because the flu is something that has, you know, been with us and there's a certain amount of like immunity to it. And it's also just a different virus. But, you know, the big question mark with this is it's technically a new virus, even though it's in the same family of viruses as other coronaviruses, viral load. All right. I said virus enough. And I think, you know, when we're trying to measure how quickly it's spreading, it's kind of an unfair comparison because it's everyone is like susceptible and no one has kind of
any immunities whatsoever. Well, and the flu shot changes things, like the flu vaccine, which most of you still don't take. Shame on you.
Yeah. Come on now.
But yeah, so I mean, so there are ranges, but basically we're looking at the flu 2.0, that there's, this is another thing that, you know, has that kind of a feel to it.
Yep.
And the same, you know, the same people who are susceptible to the flu are susceptible to this, you know?
Yeah. So it's actually even less, a little less scary than the flu in that like still, the people who are most susceptible to like severe consequences, so either like getting really, really sick and hospitalized or dying from this, are still people who are older and have weaker immune systems. And, you know, that tends to be what seasonal flu does, but seasonal flu can also affect like little kids. And what's different about COVID-19 is that it's not it doesn't really seem to be affecting little kids that much. And something that I would look for, and if we really wanted to start like actually legitimately panicking about this, is if it started affecting like healthy young adults.
Yeah. If it made the jump.
35 year olds who like otherwise were healthy. If it started like causing more severe complications in that segment, that would be worth concern. But the fact that it's kind of impacting people that already have immune issues, to me just speaks to the fact that this is behaving a lot like a flu virus, and is kind of behaving like how we are expecting it to behave, essentially.
Okay. And I just want to go over this one thing. We had a listener reach out to me, Steve. I hear you.
What's up, Steve?
Yeah. And so Steve's actually been listening to the pod from the beginning, and he sent a bunch of really good questions and interesting information to us. But he sent me this Twitter feed for this scientist, Liz Specht. I think I'm saying that right, either Specht or Specht. But she's the Associate Director of Science and Technology at Good Food Inst. I don't know. I guess she supports alternative proteins for sustainable food future, which sounds like she's probably a vegan, which totally on board with. Yeah. But this is pretty interesting. He sent me this feed, and it's a tweet that she sent out, and it's a series of tweets. And it starts with, I think most people aren't aware of the risk of systemic healthcare failure due to COVID-19 because they simply haven't run the numbers yet. Let's talk math. So she starts with, let's conservatively assume that 2,000 current cases in the U.S. today by March 6th. This is about 8 times the number of confirmed lab diagnosed cases. We know there is substantial underreporting due to lack of test kits. I'll address implications later, blah, blah, blah. But she says, we can expect that to continue and doubling in cases every 6 days. More math, fun. Here,
don't
I mean
gloss
actual
over the math. Hey,
exactly.
You
know. I'll go into the real math, but yeah. This is just, you know, people like Brett who can understand it. So I'll break it down a little bit more. Confirmed cases may appear to rise faster in short term due to new test kits rolling out. So we're looking at about 1 million U.S. cases by the end of April, 2 million by May 5th, 4 million by May 11th, and so on exponentially. It'll move on. So the big thing she's trying to get at, I think, is that as the healthcare system begins to be saturated under the caseload, it will become increasingly hard to detect, track, and contain new transmission. In the absence of extreme interventions, this will likely slow down significantly until hitting 1% of the population. What she's really worried about is this next factor here, is that the caseload and size could really hurt our healthcare system. She says the U.S. has about 2.8 million hospital beds per 1,000 people. With a population of 330 million, this is 1 million beds. At any given rate, 65% of those are already taken because we have sick people already. It's a given. But that would only leave about 330,000 beds. So she's saying basically we won't be able to keep up the load of patients if this continues the way it does.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, but I think she's also, like, this is the worst case scenario. This is what we talked about before in the case of, like, there's, predictive modeling.
Yeah.
So predictive modeling, this is the worst case scenario. If everything bad that has happened continued to happen in that way, then this would happen, correct?
Yeah. So it's really hard to predict the spread of a disease, particularly one that's new. Epidemiologists have all these like modeling systems where they can like pull levers on certain variables and have like kind of, you know, if then scenarios. But what she's getting at is like medical surge capacity. Like, we're not overall ready for something that will overwhelm our, you know, supply like this. And this is not something that's new either. Like, hospitals have contingency plans where they plan for like, what are we going to do if we're all of a sudden overwhelmed with people who need mechanical ventilators and they only have a limited supply? They actually come up with like triage algorithms that will tell them who should get the ventilator and who should not, based on like who's more likely to survive the infection or whatever. So like if you're basically too sick, you won't get it because it won't do you any good and it could be better used for someone else. And if you're too healthy, you won't get it. So like hospitals have these like triage plans in place basically to like distill your organs down into a number based on how well your organs are functioning. And then they will give you a ventilator based on that number.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it's literally triaging, like the most basic form. Like, we did that when I was worked 911, and you come across like an MVA or a motor vehicle accident, and there's somebody who's DOA, there's another person who's bleeding out, and there's another person who might just have like, you know, a regular issue. That other person stays in the middle, that middle person goes to the hospital, and that first person, obviously DOA, is there. So like, you just break it down that way. And so I appreciate like what she's going into, the details she's going into. It's really interesting. However, she also talks about, so that's all bad, but now masks. So they say we have a stockpile of 20 million N95 masks and 30 million surgical masks. But there are 18 million healthcare workers, so that takes away a huge portion. Mm-hmm. And then 6 million healthcare workers are, you know, at work any given day, blah, blah, blah. Basically stating that all of these stockpiles and everything will be gone in this time frame. That we won't have enough.
Yeah.
And on top of that, most of these masks are made in China. And so those factories are shut down right now. They're not able to export those things out. So yeah. If there's a shortage, we're going to be in some trouble because it's going to be a while before we can get those things back.
Mm-hmm.
And while I respect that and it's really good information, I worry that something like this type of information is only going to speed up the same process that she's worried about. People are now going to go out and freak out and say, oh, by May 2nd, Liz Specht says we're going to run out of masks. So I have to buy, you know, I'll go buy in bulk. You know, if I have a bunch of money, I'm going to go buy a ton of masks online.
Yeah.
You know,
and there's like rampant price gouging online for like N95 masks and things like that, which again, not recommended for just like going about your daily business. Won't do anything for you. You're just wasting your money. And it's, you know, better spent. The mask is better spent on someone either who is sick, who is like actively coughing up viral particles, or someone who is working in like a healthcare facility who is going to be like for sure around people with coronavirus and is in close proximity. But like going to the store or like taking that business trip on the plane, like the mask is not gonna save you.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. I think it's ridiculous that like we'll go into it a little bit here. Like, it's hit the U.S. now. We've talked about it a bit. And one of the biggest outbreaks so far in the U.S. is in Washington. Mm-hmm. I learned through my work, actually. I've been on like so many conference calls about COVID-19, about how we're going to deal with it, all of that, like a billion of them, like so many hours of my life I'll never get back.
Mm-hmm.
And every time, because my friend Mark, who is a friend of the pod, is usually in the same room with me, he'll just look at me every time and roll his eyes because he's like, I know you've already had to read like 17 articles just to get, you know, your next episode out. So, so what happened was in Washington, the Life Care Center in Kirkland, there were 7 fatalities and 79 cases. So this is the actual area we should be worried about. Like, this is a skilled nursing facility where these people have, you know, comorbidities, they have multi-system failure, they have issues that are going on, and these people need the supplies that we're now all hoarding and stealing.
Right.
So that's a huge problem. Like, if you're actually worried about people getting sick and people dying from this, stop going to Costco and buying out all the supplies. Stop going to Home Depot and buying all this. By the way, all of you going to Costco in droves, you're going amongst a million other people who could possibly give you this disease. Maybe calm down a little bit. Like, you're actually hurting your chances of not getting COVID-19.
Yeah. And hoarding supplies, you know, I think we've seen the reaction of, you know, people fighting over toilet paper in the aisles and things like this. And we were just talking before we started recording about, you know, friends who maybe had a cold or something, who was, you know, just going to the store to buy Tylenol or something. And it's all wiped out. Like, all the shelves are gone because people are all of a sudden hoarding like it's the end of the world.
Yeah, we have a bunch of doomsday preppers on our hands now. It went from being a ridiculous show to now it's everybody in the United States. And those people are so far ahead of you. They have bunkers already. They know how to climb trees when they're like six years old. It's intense. So, I mean, that goes into the next section, you know, Brett, and I think you can cover this, is basically the misinformation and the issues that we're having.
Yeah, so, you know, there's the spread of the virus and the disease, which is technically at this point a pandemic. So what that means is it's an epidemic, which is a outbreak of disease at higher levels than you would expect normally. So when it's a new disease, you would expect there to be zero coronavirus per year. So any amount of coronavirus is technically an epidemic. And when that epidemic spreads across multiple countries and it doesn't respect passport laws, it is technically a pandemic. And a pandemic does not mean severe. It has nothing to do with how severe or deadly it is. It just means literally it's spreading around across borders. So it is a pandemic now, and it's, you know, spreading. It's kind of behaving a lot like a flu epidemic would. And then there's the infodemic, which is like this wave of information and misinformation and 24-hour news cycle and social media. And go to any coffee shop or go like anywhere in public and you overhear people, you know, hey, did you hear about this or that with the coronavirus? So we have this like huge gap between the pandemic and the infodemic. And what we wanted to talk about now is basically addressing in the best way that we can in our viral load, way. We wanted to address some listener questions and feedback that we've been getting through our social media and through our Gmail account.
So real quick, Brett, before we jump into the questions, can we just discuss one thing just because I don't know and it interests me and I don't want to do the research because you already know.
We'll see.
Is there something past a pandemic? So when it goes from epidemic to pandemic, when it's like global, like if it's a global like issue, like a whole thing, is there another word
like
for that?
Like an Uberdemic? Like a solar system demic.
Is there something like when it becomes like the whole population, is there anything else or is it just basically you're here now?
No, pandemic is it.
Okay, there's nothing scarier sounding.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary sounding, and that's why I think the World Health Organization hasn't come out and officially declared it a pandemic, even though it is a pandemic, what's happening right now. But if it killed nobody, or it killed 90% of the people it infected, it would still be a pandemic.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with how serious it is. It's just a serious sounding word. It conjures up like zombie apocalypse stuff. So if people are hoarding TP now, what are they going to be doing when it gets officially declared a pandemic by the WHO? But yeah, there's nothing past that. I mean, you have disease spreading around globally. That is it, right? There's nowhere to go from there unless like, yeah, technically, what would happen if, like, astronaut on the space station got coronavirus? And then technically you had, like, interplanetary something like that?
We'll figure it out.
We're going to have to consult with NASA.
I'm going to write this script right now, and it'll be out soon.
So speaking of questions and answers, maybe that we can actually answer, from the absurd to the serious, we combed through some of the listener questions that we've been getting, and in honor of International Women's Day, that's the day that we are recording, March 8th in the year of our Lord 2020, we found a woman
we found one. You caught her?
Mm-hmm.
Trapped her?
Yeah. And we thought that it would be good to have her help us go through some of our listener questions. So here to help us is Sarah Bales Myers. She is a therapist, sea lion rescuer, and friend of the show, and for the first time on Viral Load podcast. Here's Sarah.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
This is a really big role here. Let's see if I
So you're gonna read us some of these kind of questions. Some are more serious and some are a little sillier, but read us some of these questions and Andy and I will do our best to answer them.
All right, so this first one we have just gets straight to the point. Dear Viral Load, is this the end?
So short answer, no.
Yeah, I'd say no. Not yet anyways, we're not quite there.
Yeah, so I think, in terms of just the virus, it is behaving just how I am expecting it to behave. And the more I look at the information and the statistics and how it's behaving and who it's affecting and all the numbers, I am finding more comfort with that. But if you turned off the numbers and the logic and just looked at CNN or Facebook or wherever, or listening to people at the coffee shop, it certainly does seem like this is like the end of days, right?
Yeah. So, and I mean, even if this became recurrent, so this game like became seasonal flu number two, like the second thing. So if it kept its like, am I correct, virulency, like the same amount of people it killed, or mortality rate, if it was the same and this happened every single year, the way that we repopulate, you know, we make little demons and they run around, like we're not going to die off from a disease like this. Yeah. Like we're not like it can't kill us like this.
Yeah.
This isn't something that's like, you know, like a malaria that could like wipe out, you know, entire populations.
Well, so like, is this just going to become like a thorn in our side, like another thorn in our side, like the flu, right? So every flu season, there's like a cluster of different types of flu that circulates around. And is this just going to be another, like, you know, strain of a virus that gets us sick during the winter months? Or maybe it just fizzles out completely. Mm-hmm. But either way, we're already living with a bunch of viruses that cause respiratory illness and could possibly kill us. And it's called the flu season. Yeah. It happens every year, and it's not the end of days. And I think worst case scenario, this becomes just another virus in our like repertoire of things that cause us to get sick and possibly kill us. And that's sort of what it's looking like.
All right. So it's not the end.
It's not the end.
So next question.
All right. Dear Viral Load, why do we need to be washing our hands if this is a viral airborne disease?
Okay, let's try to unpack this.
So,
there's truths in there. It is a virus, so it's viral. It is spread by airborne droplets. So when you sneeze fat droplets, that's where the virus goes. Because it's up in your respiratory tract if you're sick. And when you cough and sneeze, it like forces it out. And everyone's running around telling you to wash your hands. So why should you wash your hands if this is a viral airborne disease?
So, I mean, those droplets have to land, correct? They don't just like stay in the air forever. They end up landing on things.
Yeah.
So when they land on things, you touch those things.
Right.
And those people who cough, a lot of them don't cough directly like into their shoulder like they're supposed to, or their elbow.
Yeah.
And so everything around you potentially could be
like,
you know,
a vector.
And bacteria can last on surfaces. This in particular, I'm learning more from my like from my company and everything. It's basically like 24 hours. It's not like something like TB, like active TB can last for a really long period of time. Brett, you probably know
it doesn't
exactly
like stay suspended in the air. And I think based on like depending on like conditions, how hot it is, sunny, whatever, like it can stay viable for just, you know, a couple hours typically. And yeah, so it's like if you sneeze and a bunch of snot gets on your hand and then you go to like open the door and you leave and then the next person behind you goes and opens the door and then you like scratch your face, like that's how it spreads. So the way to break that chain is to just like wash your hands. And one of the best ways that I've heard, like how should you be washing your hands, is like pretend that you wear contacts and you've just been like cutting up a bunch of like jalapenos and then you need to change your contact lenses. So wash your hands like you would if you're going between chopping up jalapenos to like putting in your contacts.
That level. That's pretty perfect. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Also, you should just be washing your hands. Like, why is this a problem? Like, when did we just stop washing our hands? Like, the fact that there's this much blowback from scientists just telling you to wash your hands, you're like, oh, why do I need to do that? Because you need to be a human. Like, this is gross.
Or because you're a human.
Yeah.
You need to wash your hands. And because you're oozing and you're gross and... but we love you. 5 stars on iTunes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Please go rate and review us so we can move up the charts. We appreciate it. Yeah. But you're all gross.
Yeah.
Also, people are going crazy buying all the soap and buying all this stuff. What were you doing before? What was not at your house prior to? Like how much?
Yeah.
You're gross.
Ugh. I think people just don't think that they're like taking enough action. It's like, well, soap and water, like well, this is a new... zombie apocalypse disease, right? Like what is just like wimpy little soap and water gonna do? Like I feel like people think they're taking more action or like being more proactive if they like go buy a bunch of like face masks and like you know, bathe themselves in Lysol disinfectant or whatever. But like just viruses are really like fragile and they don't like being outside and they don't like being outside of a cell. And you just hit that thing with some soap and water and boom, that's good enough.
Like, yeah, I
that
feel like
takes
maybe,
care of it.
Maybe sometimes it's like too simple of an answer. It's very similar to like, do you guys remember when Obama like did the tire pressure gauge thing for EPA? He was like, oh, just like fill your tires and you'll get better gas mileage. And people made fun of him for like months. And it was like, no, this is just one thing that could like positively affect something simply. So I think sometimes things seem so simple that people just are like, that can't possibly be true.
Right. Yeah. Like, such a simple solution to such a complex global like catastrophe, like soap and water.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. And it is effective against the viral airborne diseases for the reasons we just talked about.
Yeah. You can also sing your happy birthday to yourself. If nobody's done it to you, you can do that every day while you wash your hands.
Yeah.
So just end of story, wash your hands.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, Dara, what do you got for us next?
All right, this next question is a little meatier, so here we go.
Okay.
Dear Viral Load, I have my fringe boots, crop tops, and all the body glitter I could get my millennial hands on because it's festival season. But now my boyfriend, Man Bun Brad, is telling me, babe, we can't go because of social distancing measures. Should I break up with him, or is he right?
So, yes.
Yeah.
Just all the way around, right?
Just break up with him.
Yeah.
So he is right, and also I am so upset that you exist. No, I'm glad you're a listener, but yeah, I don't know, man. I guess, Brett, do you think there's any truth to that?
So social distancing is a thing, like when there's an outbreak and when it's a contagious disease that spreads from person to person, like one of the ways to slow it is to limit contact with like basically other disease filled people potentially. But this has to do with, I think, like the major music festivals are getting canceled. Like South by Southwest has been canceled.
Coachella, you're next.
Coachella might be next, depending on when this airs. It might be getting canceled right now. I don't know. But, you know, we could go on and on about and debate, like, just, you know, how these festivals are ruining and becoming, like, corporate and all that stuff.
It's, yeah. You know. Well, I mean, it is becoming a real question now because, I mean, Italy, like, all the Italian football clubs or soccer teams are now playing in front of no fans. It's super awkward. It's weird. But they're like, we don't want to chance it. So we just don't want anybody in our stadiums.
That's like soccer in the United States.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. That's just the MLS. That's what we call it. And so, like, they're losing billions of dollars. So we'll address that a little bit more later with our specialist here. But, I mean, that's pretty huge. So, and the NBA just said that they might suspend having fans at games, which would be a it would be a huge hit to the economy and to the NBA in general. I mean, I'd watch that just because I think it'd be hilarious to see people dunking very, like, enthusiastically and getting no applause afterwards and just having to, like, jog back down the court sad, like, alone. Yeah. Like, I just think watching somebody who has that much athleticism and just be, like, so frustrated that they can't, like, you know, that'd be like if we recorded and no one ever listened.
Yeah.
I'd just get so,
which is definitely
so sad.
Not, which is definitely not the case.
But we have like 10 of you. We know who you are by name.
Yeah, 5 stars on iTunes. But I think at this point, like, you have to weigh the cost benefits of, like, the economic impact. So, like, if canceling Coachella could cost the economy $1 billion versus, like, is it realistically going to actually make a dent in slowing the disease? Like, there is some truth to, like, social distancing does slow, like, disease outbreaks. But where I'm sitting, like, I feel like that falls into, like, the infodemic kind of hysteria realm of things where, like, I don't feel like it's necessary, especially necessary. Because, again, to bring it back to, like, flu, we don't cancel music festivals because of flu season, right? Well, or even, like, a bad flu season. Like, we're actually right now in a relatively bad flu season in terms of, like, the number of hospitalizations and stuff. And if you look over the past, like, 5, 6, 7 years of flu seasons, like, this one's pretty bad, and no one's canceling anything because of that. Right?
Well, and on top of that, like, Coachella, for instance, like, how many of the susceptible population are going to be at Coachella? Like, how many old people are going to be there in order to get sick?
Yeah, 70-year-old, you know.
I'd pay to see that,
though. 70-year-old people with compromised immune systems. I mean, it's not the prime target for the virus in terms of severity. I mean, virus doesn't care who it infects. Like, you know, viruses just infect whatever they can. But in terms of, like, how severe the disease is going to be, this is not the population that's at risk for that. So I would say, break up with Man Bun Brad. But maybe not for the reasons that we just discussed. But this is not a dating advice show.
Definitely
don't,
not.
Don't take it from me.
Yeah. Also, I'd say that people who are alone can take solace in the fact that, like, hey, you're, like, going to be healthier, you know, moving forward. So don't be upset about that.
Is that low-key shade you're throwing at me right now?
No. Okay. No shade thrown.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. So okay. On that, right. It's okay.
Along.
Help us, Sarah.
Next question we have is, summer is coming up and I just love an iced cold Corona beer on the beach. Is my summer ruined?
So should you not drink Corona beer because of the coronavirus? How simple your life must be.
Yeah.
So that ties into like the kind of silly infodemic stuff. What do we call it? The pandemic of fears and beers.
Yeah.
Because like it has coronavirus. People think that Corona beer, and legitimately some people do think that like that is a risk factor. This reminds me a lot of when I was watching the elections and the run up to the elections when Obama was running for his second term. They were interviewing like people on the street and saying, well, are you going to vote for, who are you going to vote for? Why not? And they interviewed this woman and they said, are you going to vote for Barack Obama? She's like, oh no, why not? Because his name sounds too much like Osama. Like Osama bin Laden.
That was a legit thing.
And
yeah,
that was,
I remember
like,
this.
I'm not going to vote for Barack Obama because Obama sounds too much like Osama, and Osama bin Laden's a terrorist. So like, coronavirus and Corona beer have nothing to do with each other. But I would say, at the risk of losing a potentially lucrative sponsor, you're going to ruin your summer if you bring Corona anyway. So
Yeah. Your friends are not. Hopefully you have smart friends.
Do better.
It might hurt your partying.
Yeah, just do better. But, so, yeah.
Well, I mean, we'll talk about it later. Like, mm-hmm. I think they actually took a hit in sales for a minute, like because of the fact that people weren't buying.
I think like 80% of people will like not drink Corona beer right now.
That's
because of that.
Modelo is so pumped.
Yeah.
Dos Equis is like, yes. Yeah, Tecate for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Fake news spread by Coors Light.
Yeah, exactly.
Coors. Okay.
All right.
What else we got?
All right. Next up is Dear Viral Load. My friends and I are planning a European trip this summer, you know, to really find ourselves. # eat, pray, love. Should we still go?
So should you cancel that big girls trip? That like
No. You should actually like jump on this. Plane ticket costs are way down. Mm-hmm. Like if you buy your tickets right now, I mean, I don't know. I would take like a really nice vacation in order to maybe be like sick for a couple weeks. Like,
so it's like the risk that you're willing to be okay with, and basically like there's the risk of contracting the disease, which still is very low, versus the risk of like being stuck in airports because like, you know, security is a lot stricter, or being stuck in like longer lines, or having everyone, you know, running around wearing face masks and stuff. So it's like, are you willing to like put up with that kind of inconvenience, or like that level of hysteria is really kind of the question to ask. But it's not like, should I cancel because I'm going to get the virus? No, because like the risk is so low there. I mean, we have West Nile virus in California right now, but are people canceling their like Sonoma wine country trip because there is West Nile virus in Sonoma? Like, no. I mean, there's still a risk. Like, there is a risk you could get Lyme disease or West Nile virus or coronavirus if you go outside and, you know, breathe the air, but that's just like living in a world with diseases. So the risk is still really low. But depending on like what country you want to go to and how they're responding to it, you may be stuck in like longer lines or potentially getting stuck into quarantines or whatever. So, you know, it's, are you willing to be okay with that level of like kind of risk, I guess. But, I don't know what Eat, Pray, Love, is, I guess, about finding yourself and like,
she goes to Bali, right? That's all I know about that.
Italy.
Oh, I thought she went to Bali. See, I have no idea about anything.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, basically, when in doubt, go to Italy, mm-hmm. eat the pasta, drink the red wine, calm down.
Yeah. Sage advice. Okay. Yep.
All right.
All right. Next question we have here. All right. Dear Viral Load, should I bathe in bleach to prevent and or cure coronavirus?
And this is actually one that I've seen that the World Health Organization has had to actually respond to. Like, should I bathe in bleach? Well, no.
No.
I mean, that might prevent you from contracting the coronavirus because you might be dead. Because you can't get sick, you know, you can't get infected if you're, you know, dead from bleach poisoning. And I don't even know if that's a thing. But no, like dousing yourself in bleach is not the cure because that is not how the virus enters your body.
Yeah, it's not entering toward your through your pores.
No, it doesn't go into your skin. It is, you know, airborne. It happens when you touch your face because you've touched a contaminated surface. So, like, soap and water will do that. But, like, bathing in bleach, that's just something else. I don't know.
Short answer, don't bathe in bleach. Just don't do it.
Just don't do it. Okay. What is, what's up next?
Okay. It's kind of what you guys were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. but dear viral load, should I stock up on N95 respirators?
Short answer, no. Don't do it. Don't do it. You're just going to hurt the people who actually need it. Don't do it yet. I'd put a yet on there just in case something crazy happened, worst case scenario, but don't do it. Yeah. You're spending a lot of money on something that you don't essentially need, and then healthcare professionals actually need it, so don't do it.
There's no scientific evidence that supports N95 respirators are going to keep you safe in a community setting. It is only for people who are definitely going to be like working in close contact with people with coronavirus or other viruses. Or if you have the virus, it prevents you from kind of spewing your viral load into the atmosphere, right? And onto other people. So no, save them for people who actually need them and need to use them.
Back away from Home Depot, everyone.
Get
just back away.
Yep.
Okay, next we have, why are people fighting each other in the aisles of grocery stores over the last package of toilet paper?
Short answer, we're dumb. People are dumb.
I was going to come up with like a Chipotle joke or something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Also, again, what were you doing? Like, how are you wiping your ass before? Like, what were you using? Like, we just, and now, well, why do you need so much more? What happened?
And what do people think the symptoms of coronavirus are? It's not explosive diarrhea, is it? I mean, I'll have to check the New England Journal of Medicine on that, but I'm pretty sure that's not. But I think people are just hoarding and doomsday prepping and just getting caught up in the hysteria. And it is making for entertaining kind of like memes and things on social media to watch, you know, grown adult like men and women fighting each other over 2-ply.
Yeah.
But other than for my amusement, just don't do that and just kind of live your life normally. Maybe put some extra batteries next to the flashlight. You know, make sure your car's got gas in it. Just kind of like basic kind of preparedness stuff.
So you don't need all the toilet paper. Keep the TP.
It looks like we have one more question from the viewers.
Yes,
listeners,
last question. Dear viral load, the stock market seems to be reacting to all the news. What's going on there?
Well, Andy and I are probably not the best people to answer this question.
Yeah, definitely not.
So, you know, I don't know much about finances. My stock ticker is where I get all of my financial news. And the last time I checked it seems to have suddenly stopped at October 29th, 1929 for some reason. So I hope there's nothing going on there. But anyway, I wanted to welcome our guest who has worked on the trading floor for a large Wall Street firm for the last 15 years and has been on the front line of the economic reaction to the disease. So here to break it down for us, what is money? Austin Myers, the Gordon Gekko of finance, is here to answer our financial questions. Austin, you work in finance. This is your world. How have the last few weeks with the whole coronavirus scare and public reaction been for you at work?
So first, thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yeah,
this
hey,
cool.
Austin, how are you?
This is cool to be on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you know.
This,
prepare for your life to be different now.
This definitely beats losing money every time I blank.
Yeah.
This is a welcome change from the last couple weeks. So
just getting phone updates constantly about money being out of your, that's like my worst fear. Just like having to check everything and just losing money constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The last couple weeks have been pretty crazy, to be honest. I worked through this financial crisis and there's elements of this that feel a lot like 2007 and 2008, which is pure panic. and crazy amounts of volatility. But this is certainly different, and it's really evolving. And I think what's interesting is that most of the people on Wall Street are not epidemiologists and have no training in it. But everyone has had to sort of get up to speed on epidemiology and how diseases spread, because that's really what's driving driving what's going on in the market. But just to put some stuff in context here, what's gone on over the last 2 weeks. So the aggregate market cap, which is basically how much all the stocks in the world are worth, is down $4 trillion in 2 weeks.
A couple bucks.
That's a lot of money. So, yeah.
What is that in context, though? Like versus like the amount of money that typically is like in that pool, like $4 trillion out of how much?
Yeah, so I think global market cap is something like $60 trillion.
So that's a lot. So it's, that's a good
how many
chunk.
Grains of sand it's, on how many beaches is that?
It's a good amount of money. to put that in context, Google is worth $1 trillion. So this is like four Googles
just going under, just
wiped vanishing off the face of the earth.
Well,
wow. You
know.
That's
so
worst things could happen. I don't know.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't check your 401k statement. I wouldn't log on to your Schwab account. It's not pretty right now. On Friday we had the largest change in yields ever in history. Wow. So the market has definitely been pretty volatile, and my firm and our clients have lost a good amount of money in the last couple of weeks, which puts people on edge and upset, and losing money is never fun.
Yeah, so, understandably, that's miserable.
So that's been our last couple of weeks.
So why are the markets reacting like this? Why are they so afraid? Why is this being so impacted by this virus?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've had a lot of debates and conversations with people that are frustrated by this, going, you know, this is no more than the flu. Why are stocks reacting this way? This doesn't make any sense. And there's some truth to that. But I think investors are concerned, and rationally so, not really about the health impact of this, because Brett's, you know, given us a lot of information on that. And we sort of know that, you know, except for people that have compromised immune systems and are elderly, this is probably pretty benign for most people. But what's not is the economic spillover effects. So when you look at how governments are reacting, how companies are reacting, and how individuals are reacting to this, there's some stuff that's really, really serious and really, really bad for the economy. So one example is canceling events, canceling conventions, canceling South by Southwest, potentially canceling Coachella. I've heard rumors of canceling the Olympics this summer. These are really, really big events for local economies and national economies. And this takes people out of work. This takes spending out of the economy, and all these things are really, really bad for economic growth. So those are the things that investors are really reacting to. And I think that one of the things that's a little bit scary from an investor standpoint is that the health reaction and the economic reaction are in direct conflict with each other. You can't protect the most amount of people by implementing really strong quarantines and encouraging people not to go out in public and to not go to events and to stay in their homes. And you can't suggest and recommend this activity and also have a healthy economy at the same time. And so companies, governments, and individuals have chosen the health aspect at the expense of the economy, and if this continues, there's a potential that this could get fairly bad.
Yeah, and that makes sense. So to me, this still speaks to this like infodemic versus epidemic thing, which is really interesting to me, and I'm trying to like reverse engineer this whole public reaction, but it totally makes sense, like that. You know, what I see is, I guess, not like it's not a brave thing to just like shut down a university or to cancel an event because no one wants to like put themselves out there as like the ones who stood up and said like, this is hysteria, this is an overreaction. Like no one wants to be that person. So it's just this like domino effect of like, well, you know, all the other schools are shutting down, all the other music festivals are shutting down. So it's like this whole domino effect. And like, that's what the markets are reacting to, which like, I hadn't really thought about it like that, but it totally makes sense to me, right?
Yeah. And so just to put in perspective, Austin, so this has been a pretty big, you said 10% of, you know, which is like 4 trillion. How long will that take to rebound? Like if on like regular growth, like scale, like if everything started going back to normal, how long would that take to be able to make up that ground versus like if it continued in that direction, how long would it take us to like pull out of that kind of like an economic downturn?
So I think that over the long term, investors aren't really concerned about this because stocks are priced well into the future. How many cans of soup is Campbell's Soup going to sell into infinity? They're not worried about how many over the next month.
Okay.
And so those, how many they're going to sell in 2026 isn't really predicated on this. Okay. So investors will look past this.
Yeah.
But what the downside potential is here is that economies freeze. Mm-hmm. And right now the disease is spreading at an exponential pace outside of China. In China, it's no longer exponential. But if you look at the US and you look at Italy and you look at other places, it's growing exponentially. And the reaction to every new breakout is full lockdown. I mean, you look at what's going on at Stanford. Stanford gets one case and they shut down the campus.
Yeah.
That's likely to put businesses in that area into failure and likely to cause a small recession right around the Stanford community.
Yeah.
You're going to have small businesses that fail, which could push those homeowners into foreclosure. Mm-hmm. And that's going to happen in all of these little communities where they go into full lockdown. You could see travel companies, you could see airlines, you could see, the cruise liner stocks are down like 50% over the last 2 weeks. And all of these reactions cause those businesses to cut employees and have reduced profits, and those cascade into a larger impact on the economy. Yeah. So what investors are concerned about is that this freezing effect that we see in these localized communities go to most communities as this continues to spread, and we end up in a very deep potential. I mean, this could potentially spill into a depression if the reaction continues to be full lockdown of every community that it erupts.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So like, I mean, for instance, like with Italy stopping their football matches or, you know, soccer matches, and if the NBA pulls all their players and the vendors aren't making any money, those people are people who are actually going to suffer. Like the small term, like vendors, people who are like making daily wage, minimum wage, and they're scraping by, who now have no source of income. And those people are then going to be, you know, in our welfare systems, like working off the, you know, it could potentially have that cascading effect versus like, the NBA can absorb no one showing up for a while. They're billionaires, and I mean, it'll hurt them like for a short term, but they will rebound. But the smaller impact of that, like,
yeah. But I mean, even looking at the NBA, like the NBA is going to have money taken out of their pockets from lost ticket sales, which means they'll probably reduce their advertising, which will like there's all these spillover effects.
Yeah, see,
that just,
that's where your brain does the beautiful mind thing, and I just go, oops.
And you look at that and you see that, and so you're immediately, you know, if you're an investor, you're going to say, okay, advertising dollars are going to change based on this, and there's all these cascading effects. So,
so
that's, I think, what investors are looking for is either the disease to stop spreading exponentially, or for governments and companies and individuals to stop reacting like everyone is going to die.
Right.
And, I think that, you know, Brett and I talked a little bit offline about this. I think it's fear of lawsuits and fear of not doing enough.
Yeah.
Is pushing people into these way oversized reactions. And that's what really concerns investors, is that people are freaking out about what they really shouldn't be freaking out about and grinding economies to a halt.
Yeah, okay. Because it's way easier to say, well, we overreacted than to be criticized later for like maybe not doing enough and then having like sick people or even like deaths on your hands potentially. Like if you take the blame for, well, you didn't shut down that festival, so there, you know, these extra cases occurred or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just people being afraid of that, but that has these huge economic ripple effects, which then in turn can, you know, obviously impact people's health and well-being. This creates a whole kind of stressed out society, which makes people more susceptible to disease and things like that. So it becomes this like weird, big, vicious cycle. And like to properly understand this requires like you said, beautiful mind, like systems thinking, like standing in front of a huge glass wall and like scribbling on it with a marker and, you know, looking at all the connections between nodes and things like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's, I feel like I'm in between two ridiculous things because like, you have the science of that mm-hmm. and you can figure out like string theory of how like these cases are happening. And then Austin's sitting there and he's like, yeah, I can figure out like why this $1 was lost from these like 17 yeah. different, you know, places. And I'm just like, oh, cool. So am I going to be okay? like, and I think that's what everybody's worried about. Like, so, I mean, like, I don't even know. I mean, we've talked about it. We joke about it on the podcast, mm-hmm. but, like, I don't know, like Austin, how do stocks and bonds even work? Like, I have no clue. Yeah. Like, I don't even know,
I was wondering that too.
Like,
yeah, they just magically go up and down, and you buy them and hope that they're worth more when you sell them.
That's what I thought. Why isn't it working for me then?
No, it's so stocks and bonds are prices that we derive in the current based on a bunch of expectations we have in the future. So if you take a really simple company like Campbell Soup makes canned soup and they sell mm-hmm. it. It's a very simple company, and the way that you basically figure out how much it's worth is how many cans of soup are they going to sell, how much do they make per can, and assuming that they're going to grow at, you know, 3% a year for the next 100 years, and you use some Excel formulas to kind of figure out what that company's worth, getting that you get a share of that wealth that they create. Mm-hmm. Bonds are a little bit different, but that's the general idea.
Okay.
And so when you introduce something like a virus that is growing exponentially, that's having this outsized infodemic reaction that Brett talked about mm-hmm. and is causing uncertain reactions from governments and from the World Health Organization and other people, how do you put that in your model? So right. like if you have an Excel spreadsheet of what Campbell's soup is going to be worth, where in your model do you input that stores may shut down?
Yeah, so like you'd have to
price that.
Yeah, and do you do that? Do you guys do like predictive modeling a lot like what Brett yeah. and scientists have to do and say like, hey, we predict every 5 years or so that the market yeah. just drops. So we build that in. Like we know we're going to lose X amount at this point. You do the same thing with the stock market. Like is that something that you guys do? Where you're like actually we'll build that into the model and then you have to like for something like this, you're like, oh, this far exceeds what we expected.
Well, so when stocks drop, it's because of two things. It's because of something that's exogenous that shocks the market, or it's something that's part of the business cycle that changes expectations. So those are the two things that price it. And so this is an exogenous shock that that changes how people are running their views about the future, really. So to answer your question, no, we don't, that's not priced in, is that this is likely to fall 10% in 5 years okay. type thing. That 10% fall will be due to something that creates it.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So can I just say exogenous shock sounds like the most like badass metal band name ever.
Yeah, that is pretty good. Yeah.
But yeah, it reminds me of like in epidemiology, there's models that take into account things with a lot of uncertainty tied to social and environmental changes like climate change. So like when we're forecasting how bad malaria is going to be in East Africa, we have all these models that take into account different ways that the climate may change and weather may change. And there's like a ton of unpredictability, especially when we're talking about weather. So it's like it's like when epidemiology and economics collide to kind of predict the stock market. And like, I'm curious, like, is there any, is this like kind of a first of its kind kind of reaction or does this remind you of how economies or whatever have reacted to other outbreaks? Like, is there precedent or is this like kind of new ground?
So in terms of market reaction, we're getting to new ground. And it's not so much that that this is a more serious or spreading more quickly disease than others. It's really the public health response that's troubling and scary for investors. And it's tough to raise your hand and say, hey, this is all crazy, just let people get sick. But I think that for the markets to recover, we sort of need to let that happen, because we can't have billions of people locked in their homes not spending money. There are other things that we've seen that have shocked the markets and then turn out not to be such a big deal. There was a huge amount of fear around Y2K. That Y2K was going to cause computers to not work and people would get scared and pull their money out of the bank and there'd be this ripple effect through the economy. It ultimately didn't happen. But that's sort of where we are now, is that people are very fearful that this will continue to ripple, that businesses will fail and unemployment will skyrocket and all of these bad economic trends will continue in a very troublesome direction.
And do you think like lessons being learned now, or if there are lessons being learned now, like could be used like for like the next outbreak? Because this wasn't the first and it won't be the last outbreak like this. And I think so far, like, we've been lucky in terms of like how severe it is, like the mortality rate and things like that. But you know, what's troubling to me is that this happened, and it's, you know, it's spreading, like, I think in a fairly predictable way. The public reaction is not, but what's troubling to me is like that it happened, like that the spillover event happened, and that it's going to happen again, and it could be actually way, way worse. And is there any this market reaction, is there anything that could be like learned or improved or like buffers built in, or like, or is it all just like, well, everything kind of went haywire, so we're just expecting that to happen again? Is there any like forecasting for that, like the next big thing?
Well, so when you think about traders and market participants, people that trade stocks and bonds, you're not pricing in this sort of thing happening. You're not you're not pricing in a meteor striking and killing 10% of the world. You're not pricing in the sun exploding or any of these things that are too extreme to put a probability weight on. So I don't think anyone has priced into their view of the world and the future that an epidemic that on a disease that hasn't even yet been discovered is going to happen. Yeah. And it's too difficult to assign some probability to that. Like, what's the probability?
Yeah.
Well, it's like when hospitals are doing their surge capacity modeling for like, how do we assign ventilators based on, basically they have scenarios in which they have pandemics that are certain severity levels. And then they can say, well, our response will then be this. Like, I'm just wondering like if there's any way of like having that, but it's like, it sounds like what you're saying is like the social reaction is so like, nebulous and unpredictable and flighty that there's like just no way.
Yeah, I'm certainly not an expert on diseases, and I don't remember how things were during SARS or MERS or any of the other prior diseases. And you know, in my personal memory, they seem like they sort of came and went and didn't really have much of an impact on people's day-to-day lives, and it wasn't part of the fabric of just casual conversation the way it is right now. And it certainly didn't have the same market impact. So if this becomes the new norm, that every time a new disease is discovered, people freak out, stock up on things, refuse to go outside, every time a new disease hits the news cycle, stocks are going to fall immediately. Because this is going to be the train of thought that investors go down, is that as soon as this hits social media and becomes part of everyone's Facebook conversations, that the economy is going to freeze again.
One thing that I think I was just like wondering is that, could this be possibly like where we'll see big business companies want to invest in research, like in epidemiology research, to try to slow down these things from happening, like because it has such negative implications like on their business? Could we see some, you know, some positive implications of maybe some of these bigger companies actually making small investments into some research companies that would prevent this thing from happening moving forward? Like, you know, do you think that there's any possibility that could happen?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those. Should this be a public company or a private company type debates?
Yeah.
Something that's for the good of everyone. You know, should it be a private enterprise or should it be public? And that's, you know, that's a debate that we could have about a lot of different things. The way it is right now is the disease research and creating vaccines, for the most part, is privately funded. There is some government money in it.
Yeah.
Could you see a large increase coming through Congress where they devote a lot more money to fighting flus and coronavirus and other similar things? Sure, you could certainly see that. But I think it's tough to say Target is going to want to give $10 million to this because unless every company does it,
yeah, exactly.
Although some aren't some like investing in like climate change mitigation or adaptation, or they have some kind of interest in that because they're forecasting that climate change is going to be impacting them financially.
Yeah, yeah, big
so
time.
So they could tie in. I mean, in that same vein, and you know, it is all kind of related to itself in terms of like environmental change, the way that humans are impacting the environment. One of the outcomes of that is emerging zoonotic disease outbreaks like this. And so if you kind of bundle that together, if as part of like a company's climate change mitigation strategy, you bundle in the human health impacts of that, could be interesting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the energy companies and, climate change and, the changing landscape of where we get energy. For some of them, that's a going concern. It completely upends their business model. So a lot of those companies are investing pretty heavily into clean energy and renewable energy and you know, different things along those lines. There's certainly going to be a lot of Harvard case studies.
There's going to be some big changes coming through after this. Yeah.
I just think that we can't as a world respond to future ones the way we have to this. It's insane.
Yeah. I feel like that's actually a good way to wrap up in the fact that like this, like you're, I mean, literally both of you are saying pretty much the same thing for completely different areas. Like Brett's saying, well, we can't like predict the next disease based on this disease because it's completely different and you can't predict what the market's going to do based on this. You know, if another disease happened, like, would it have the same impact? We looked at that previously where, you know, during MERS and SARS outbreaks and measles outbreaks, there's almost no impact on, you know, on the stock market. However, those were way more deadly than this. So, like, it didn't really make any sense. It's a case-by-case basis, basically.
Well, yeah, and it may be in the future the next one could be way more severe and the response is underwhelming because everyone was like, well, remember with coronavirus, like everyone way overreacted and way panicked. And maybe when it is warranted, then there's like a lag that is in reaction to this. So like, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of dark.
Yeah. So if I mean, this is one of my favorite segments. So we're down to the end. We're wrapping up. And, you know, this is my part where I call what would Brett do? Oh, so in a perfect world, when it's just Brett Bales and he gets all the money in the world to do whatever he wants to tackle this, what would he do? Like, what would your answer
that's worth now? That's worth panicking over. So I would, my whole concern with all of this is like why it happened, why the spillover event happened in the first place. And if I had all the money, it would be researching, like going upstream and figuring out why this happened so we can try to identify why and where the next one might happen and what the next one might look like, because there will be another coronavirus, COVID-19, whatever it's going to be called, but there will be another one. And I think understanding that this kind of a thing is going to be happening more and more frequently as humans change the environment and as the climate begins to change, one of the outputs of this is disease spillover events. So like, what I would do is we're in like cleanup mode, like mop up mode now, trying to go around counting cases and quarantining and all this stuff. But it's like, you know, what's the expression? The horse has left the barn.
Yeah,
you know,
cats out of the bag.
Cats out of the bag. We're trying to catch smoke in a bottle. Blah blah blah.
Birds in the bush.
Yeah. But I, you know, I would shift our attention once the hysteria settles towards predicting and responding and preventing the next pandemic.
Be proactive instead of mm-hmm. reactive. I feel like we're reactionary.
We're in reaction now, and I think the best thing to do is to try to find and target the next spillover event.
Cool.
So Brett, I've got a market question for you. So when are health experts going to realize that this isn't so good to have everyone on quarantine and say, why doesn't everyone just go live their lives normally again? What's it going to take for that to happen?
I think once the financial fallout, I think, begins to be realized here, that it's going to play more of a role in making those decisions. But I think you can see that with like the World Health Organization not declaring, you know, that this is officially a pandemic or things like that. I think the reason for that is with economic factors in mind. So I don't know. I mean, it's going to just be, I think it needs to be more of a part of like contingency planning and pandemic planning is like, because ultimately the market reaction is going to do more harm to people than the virus ever did or will, right? So I don't know. You got me.
Yeah, I think part of that could be easier too, as far as like the information that goes out. Mm-hmm. Like we know, like I can throw on. I can't remember. Like what is the website? What's the station that has like the guy who's like running around telling you how you invest your money? There's like a guy for that. There's not like outside of like Neil deGrasse Tyson and like a Bill Nye. We're getting our information from crazy places. Like if we had someone to listen to, like in the forefront. Like instead of just like these random Twitter people and stuff, like I feel like there was a better global answer and there was people to look towards. Like I couldn't name the top scientists in any field right now.
Like we need like better science communicators, and we need like people to be more science literate and to be able to like not just have a gut reaction to like some random like popular media article, like a CNN article that says what they're all trying to do is come up with sensational sounding headlines to get clicks. And people just need like a baseline level of understanding to be able to like, you know, read through the article and read for themselves. And that would really solve a lot of this. I feel like if people could just like kind of, take a step back and actually try to, you know, just distill and understand the information for themselves. So like just like upping our science literacy game as like a society would be a huge help. So, you know, shout out to STEM and teachers and all that kind of stuff. And yeah.
Great. Well, I think that does it. I think mm-hmm. we know COVID-19 pretty well now. You know, we're going to continue. We'll keep revisiting this topic as it becomes. We don't want to make an entire podcast only about the coronavirus. I think we want to make sure that we're giving you good content. We have a bunch more episodes that we have planned out, and we'll have coming out to you. And we will be on task more for every Monday. I want to say thank you to Brett and Sarah for hanging out with us today. Thanks for stopping by and letting us record.
In Austin. Yeah.
You know, and Austin, I thought I said Austin and Sarah, but I said Brett and Sarah, which, that was me. Yeah. I will edit all this out. No one will find out that I said the wrong thing in the wrap up. No one will know. So thank you guys so much. And, you know, this has been fun. Make sure if you like what you hear, you rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Check us out on, social media, Instagram at Viral Load Podcast and Viral Load Podcast on Twitter. Make sure if you have any questions or concerns, send us an email. We got a few. We got some, you know, a few DMs and everything. But that's viralloadpod@gmail.com, and we'll address it. So, yeah.
Yep.
I've been Andy Pupa.
I'm Brett Bales.
Goodbye.
Bye. Ooh, that was good. Turn the world as we know it.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end.